go, baby!
Still on his feet. Now throws. It's good to Lofton.
At the 10, at the 5. Touchdown! Touchdown!
The John Murphy Show is on the air.
Here's into the end zone, and it is caught for the touchdown. Sammy Watkins, touchdown Buffalo. Touchdown, Sammy Watkins.
It's showtime. It's go time. Let's go, baby.
Dominate on three. 1, 2, 3.
Dominate.
Let's go.
And he's going to be sacked again. He is dropped again.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
Friday night show from One Bills Drive. Are the Bills a playoff team this year? Really a playoff team? We're going to talk with Casey Joyner, ESPN insider, during the 8 o'clock hour. He's written a post why the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015. We want your phone calls on that. Do you think they'll make the playoffs? Also tonight, Bills rookie Tony Stewart, just completing the rookie tour of Western New York. He'll be live with us at 7:30. And we'll talk about pro football research with John Turney coming up at 8:30.
If we're all in it, if we're all in it together, we'll win.
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Yep, two-hour show live from One Bills Drive on this Friday night. Thanks for tuning in, and hope you're able to listen in and participate maybe with phone calls. We've got lines open all night long, 803-0550, or from outside Buffalo, it's a toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. And, of course, you can join us via Twitter at John Murphy Show. A lot to talk about tonight. The One Bills Drive, pretty quiet here today because the rookies were out on the road. The veterans, there was no workout today, no off-season voluntary workout today. And so the veterans kind of scattered for the weekend. They'll be back next week. The rookies took part in the annual rookie tour. We'll talk more about that. We're going to talk with Tony Stewart about that at the bottom of this hour. He's Buffalo's sixth-round draft pick from Clemson, the inside linebacker. But they hopped on the bus 11 a.m., and the tour continues, I believe, with dinner right now. They went to New Era Camp Company, Delaware Avenue in Buffalo. They went to Niagara Falls. They paid a visit to Women and Children's Hospital in Buffalo, and then a visit to Harbor Center in Canalside, and now dinner time. And Tony Stewart, Bill's sixth-round pick, the only draft pick we have yet to hear on this show this week or over the last couple weeks. We'll get a chance to talk with him about the rookie tour and about the his first 8 or 9 days with the Buffalo Bills. He's still unsigned, right? He and Ronald Darby, the two remaining unsigned rookie draft picks so far. So that's coming up tonight. There is a post on ESPN written by Casey Joyner, really a guy who's been at the forefront of the football analytics push over the last several years. Casey Joyner explains why he thinks the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015. He's got some interesting thoughts, including the Rex Ryan effect. He compares Rex Ryan to Billy Martin, the old Major League Baseball skipper. He says the Bills have arguably the best defense in the NFL, a superb set of skill position players, and they only need, he says, Matt Castle to be a mediocre quarterback. Casey Joyner is going to join us at 8:10 tonight to talk about why he thinks the Bills will end their playoff drought. What do you think at this stage of the offseason? We're still a long way to go until training camp and a long way removed from the 2014 season. But outside observers, people like Casey Joyner make a strong case why they think the Bills are going to break the playoff drought this year. Give us your thoughts on that. 803-0550 is the number. Or from outside Buffalo, toll-free call 1-888-550-2550. Give us your thoughts on that and tell us if you think Casey Joyner is right. I think he's onto something. I think we all know the effect that Rex Ryan has had with this team and with this community so far. So that'll bear watching. Best defense in the NFL, he believes, arguably. Yep, he's onto something there. Skill position players, all but one is a proven commodity, right? All but the quarterback, pretty important piece. He says they only need Matt Castle to be mediocre, and I would submit Castle or E.J. Manuel fighting it out for that spot. But give us your thoughts. The Bills, are they bona fide 2015 playoff contenders? KC Joyner from ESPN.com says, yes, they are. What do you think? 803-0550, the number, or from outside Buffalo toll-free at 1-888-552-550. Coming up at 8:30, we've had folks from this organization on before, the Pro Football Researchers Association, and we're going to get John Turley, co-chair of their awards committee, on the air with us at 8:30 tonight. They have a new class of the Hall of Very Good. You know the Pro Football Hall of Fame. You know the inductees every year, Canton, Ohio. The Pro Football Researchers Association look for the next level of the players, and they have a class of 2014. We'll talk with John Turley about that at 8:30. They've got Larry Brown, running back for the Redskins, in the Hall of Very Good. Nolan Cromwell, I think that's an inspired choice, defensive back for the Rams in the 70s and 80s. Larry Grantham, linebacker for the Titans and Jets in the 60s and early 70s. I think that's an interesting choice. An old AFLer, Charlie Hennigan from the Houston Oilers, in their Hall of Very Good. Harlan Hill, wide receiver in the 50s and early 60s with the Bears, the Lions, and the Steelers. Winston Hill, tackle for the Jets and the Los Angeles Rams in the 1970s. Let me get through the rest of these because there's some interesting names, guys who really you wouldn't think have a chance to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but in the Hall of Very Good, I think they've gone through this pretty well. George Kuhns, a tackle who played for the Falcons and the Baltimore Colts, the former Notre Dame star in the 70s and into 1980. And finally, Ken Stabler, the quarterback for the Raiders, the Oilers, and the Saints, 15-year career. The Hall of Very Good. We'll talk with John Turley about that. He's also done some research into errors in the official sack numbers. And he's got some thoughts on Bruce Smith's career sack totals. We'll talk with him about that. And he is an AFL historian. John Turley is going to join us at 8:30. I love these guys who put all of this pro football stuff in perspective, and that's what we'll ask John Turley to do when he joins us tonight at 8:30. So that's the lineup tonight. A lot of pro football talk. You notice we did not say anything, any guests tonight, about Tom Brady, Patriots. Doesn't mean we can't talk about it. And if you have leftover thoughts on that, the phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. My thinking is this. We are going to be inundated with Patriots and Tom Brady takes. And we already have been this week. But for the rest of the summer, I think we're going to be inundated with Tom Brady news, Tom Brady Patriots takes, opinions, people taking sides. So there's no reason to really kind of cater to it. It'll happen. It'll unfold for us. A little bit of news on that front today. The NFL Players Association and Patriots quarterback Tom Brady, we all know they are appealing. This was announced last night, yesterday. They are appealing the 4-game suspension levied on Brady. And today comes word that the Players Association and Brady plan to call Commissioner Roger Goodell as a witness in the hearing. And by doing that, they believe they formally asked Goodell to remove himself as the arbitrator. ESPN says Goodell is unlikely to recuse himself as the arbitrator in the case. The league thinks his presence means there'll be a higher level of cooperation in the investigation than would be given to somebody else. ESPN also says their sources say Goodell is looking forward to hearing Tom Brady's explanation, his side of the story. So last night, Goodell said he will hear Brady's appeal. Today, the Players Association said, we want the commissioner to be a witness in this case. We're going to call him as a witness. He can't hear do the hearing. But he can, and he will. And the league won the right to do that in the 2011 collective bargaining agreement. The NFLPA doesn't signed off on that. They knew what they were signing off on. And I do think that's a flaw in the CBA. We've talked about it on this show over the last week or so. It was a mistake for the Players Association to agree to having Roger Goodell have those powers, but it is in place, and why should he surrender it until the next collective bargaining agreement? I think what is necessary here, and it won't happen here because they don't have to, but what is needed in the future is for Goodell or whoever the commissioner is to share disciplinary action with two other parties, a representative of the Players Association and a third impartial judge, arbiter, agreed upon either anyway by both teams. That, to me, is the way to move forward, but not now, too late now. They agreed to it. Goodell's going to hear the case, and he basically is going to hear an appeal of a ruling and a judgment that he already signed off on. How do you think that's going to turn out? It's a little silly, but it's the process. So Tom Brady lawyered up with some of the finest sports lawyers in the country, the NFLPA, determined to argue that the 4-game suspension is not fair and argue that it's not consistent with past punishment that's been levied for similar violations. This thing has spun out of control, ladies and gentlemen, with the NFLPA asking Goodell to step aside as the arbitrator and the league refusing that. It spun out of control. The lawyers are involved now. The lawyers are knee-deep in the Brady Patriots investigation and the eventual outcome, which is why I'm not going to issue a blanket statement that we'll never get a guest on the show over the next few months to talk about it, but producer Jay Harris, I don't think we have to cover every nuance of the story moving forward. It's lawyers in love now, really, the rest of the summer.
Right.
It's crazy, but that's the lawyers are knee-deep in this. There's tons of money at stake. There's tons of egos at stake. Think about Brady's ego is wounded. Bob Kraft's ego is wounded. Roger Goodell trying to reassert himself as the ultimate authority for the league. All of these egos are at play, and all of these lawyers are willing to step in and play their role. And I think it's going to make for a very ugly and kind of a tedious story the rest of the summer, Jay.
Yeah, because it's going to be strung out, and you're going to get details here and there. But there's some deep-seated interest specifically here with the Bills to find out what the outcome's going to be here. You know, who's going to get, you know, whose ego is going to drop maybe a little bit.
Yeah.
Who's going to be ridiculed throughout this process? Who's going to come out on top at the end? And is this something in maybe a couple of years where we look back at it and kind of shove it aside? Or is this going to turn into something where it's a historical moment where it makes both sides just look bad? Where at this point, it does.
It does, yeah. I think the league looks bad. I think Brady looks bad,
childish.
Obviously. The Patriots look bad. We're talking about deflation of footballs here.
Yeah.
It's cheating.
It's spun out of control.
It is totally spun out of control thanks to the legalities of it and the fact that both sides have really armed themselves to the teeth to fight this battle. And I really think
it's the poor timing of it all.
Well, why is it poor timing?
Well, because they could have got ahead of this before.
Yeah, this Patriots could have.
Yes.
I mean, from a league's, I even hear people, who did
on
I hear?
Both sides.
Yeah. I hear people saying that the league is desperate for publicity, even in this offseason, so this is why this is good.
No,
I don't buy that. I don't think so. And not this kind of publicity. And there's enough publicity around the NFL. And I think, you know, I'd hate to say that anything that Mark Cuban, the Dallas Mavericks owner, said would be, you know, a premonition. But he did say, you know, what did he say? Hogs get fat, pigs get slaughtered. I don't think the NFL is deliberately trying to get this attention, but people are going to get weary of this story, I believe. People are going to get weary of the story, weary of the argument. We already are. I think we are on this show, and some of our listeners are as well, just kind of weary, and you've taken your sides. You've articulated your thoughts on this matter, talking about fans, and now, you know, the lawyers will be left to clean up all the tales, as the song goes. So there is this, and this is and the lasting damage, as you said, Jay, I mean, whether it's historic and it's in the import or not. I mean, it has practical interest in who the Bills going to face in week two, who the Colts going to or who the Steelers going to face on the Thursday night opener. Some people think Brady may wind up with no game suspended. So there's a practical aspect. I believe the historical aspect of this will be the damage to Brady's legacy. And there's already evidence that it's being damaged. There's a poll out there today, ePoll Market Research. Release findings today. They conducted a poll this week. They asked more than 1,000 people, representative of the U.S. population, what they thought about Tom Brady. And for the first time in his career, almost as many people say they dislike Brady who say they are fans of the Patriots quarterback. They have this celebrity index, eScore Celebrity Index. And this week, ePoll Market Research says 47% of those surveyed now say they do not like Tom Brady. When they did the survey in February, a little bit more than 2 weeks after the Super Bowl win, that number was 32% did not like him at that point. So Brady's dislikability index went from 32% in February to 47% this week. 10 years ago, the number of people in the ePoll surveys who said they liked Brady hovered around 90%. So 10 years ago, it was 10% who did not like Brady. Now it's 47%. And it was at its lowest in 2008, right after the Spygate allegations came out, when 23% said they were not fans of Tom Brady. Now the number is 47%. His two biggest personal sponsors, Under Armour and Uggs, have been quiet all week. They have not commented on Tom Brady's situation, which is also a measure of his popularity. But you can bet your life those two companies are keeping an eye on everything that goes on here and whether or not they maintain their sponsorship. But I do think that's where the damage is probably already done for both Brady and the Patriots and their legacies. Some people will put an asterisk next to the Super Bowl victories. Tom Brady will have that label next to his name. He participated in a scheme to deflate footballs. And we can argue forever how serious a violation that is, but that will be next to his name. All right. We're talking about the Bills. We can talk about Brady if you'd like to. And we can talk about the Bills' playoff chances if you'd like. The phone line's open. 803-0550 is the number. We're toll-free from outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. You can do it via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Are the Bills bona fide playoff contenders? Our guest at 8 o'clock, KC Joyner, says yes, they are. Matt Williams tweets in, I'll slap a fiver on the Bills to make the playoffs via a wild card slot. I expect the AFC East to be ultra competitive. Yeah, I do too. I do too. I think it's going to be extremely competitive. I think the Bills and the Patriots up top with the Dolphins not too far behind. But give us your thoughts on the Bills as potential playoff contenders. The Bills have had a couple of weeks now of, they had the veteran minicamp a couple of weeks ago. They've had the voluntary offseason workouts over the last few weeks, a little bit of on-field work. And they've had a good look at wide receiver Marquise Goodwin as Goodwin gets set for his third year in the league. Goodwin knows that many people believe he'll have to fight hard for a roster spot this season. Marquise talked about the new talent that's been added to the wide receiver group and the new coaching staff that will evaluate all of them.
Oh, man, it was a great deal of competition, you know, as is. And then we added Percy, DT, and a few other people to the mix. And so, you know, that's great. I think it's great for our room. It's great for the camaraderie in the room. And it's great for the team.
Is a new coaching staff maybe the best thing that could have happened for your career?
Man, I do enjoy the coaching staff that we have here. I'm very confident in everything. The changes that the organization has made, I think it'll benefit me a lot. Definitely a fresh start. I'm looking forward to this season.
What do you chalk up your struggles last year to?
Just opportunity and staying healthy. And that's all I got to do is just focus on staying healthy. I think that was my biggest nemesis. Staying out of the training room, staying in the weight room more, and just being healthy.
Marquise, just outside of the injuries, do you feel that the previous coaching staff really never figured out how to get you involved? I mean,
I'm not really focused on that. I'm focused on now. The coaching staff here knows how to get me involved, and that's what's most important.
How then do you approach this season knowing that there's only one ball to go around and a lot of talent in that room?
All I can do is focus on me and worry about me and what I can do to help our team win. And that's just doing my job.
Percy's a known return guy. I know that's a role you've played here some. I think that'll be a pretty nice competition in training camp between you guys for that job.
No, Percy is excellent, man. No one like him. He has unbelievable talent. I'm looking forward to seeing him and competing with him at practice.
A lot of competition at the wide receiver spot when you think about it. Percy Harvin added to the mix. Sammy Watkins comes back for his second year. Robert Woods is there. Marquise Goodwin we talked about. They've got players. Chris Hogan at the wide receiver spot. Marcus Easley with his special teams ability. Rex Ryan talked about it this week. He talked about the Bills' depth at wide receiver and the chance that they may have to cut a pretty good wide receiver when it's all said and done when they make the 53-man roster.
I think it's great competition. I think it's great for the defense, too, to go up against good football players every day. And you're right. We'll probably have to cut some, you know, there's going to be some guys that that might not make our team. Quite honestly, but that is a deep, talented group. There's no question about it, especially for a team that's going to run the ball the way we say we are. But we really, all kidding aside, I mean, it is a good group, and I'm sure that might not be the only position where we let some really good players, capable NFL players, go.
Rex Ryan talking about his wide receiver group and the difficulty making cutdowns in the months ahead. Goodwin, Marquise Goodwin, the former draft pick from Texas, the speedster, one of the fastest players in the NFL. He has to stay healthy. He knows that, and the Buffalo Bills know that. And Rex Ryan talked about that it's imperative that Marquise Goodwin stay healthy so he can participate in the competition at wide receiver.
Sometimes you got to be on the field to be productive. I think if you're not on the field, it's hard to knock a guy for not being productive or whatever. I saw him catch a touchdown against somebody before, but he's he's got great speed. He's got all the tools. He can run routes, and the pads are nothing. The pads are what you do. You better be able to carry him, or you got no business playing in this league. But I think he's not just a track guy. If he was just a track guy, then you might have those concerns. But he's a football player, and as far as proving things, just get out and play. And I think it'll be, you know, I would be shocked if he doesn't play well.
That's Rex Ryan talking about Marquise Goodwin. Goodwin at the offseason workouts here. He has been for the last several weeks, ever since the day after Easter. He's taking a look at the quarterbacks, too, and the quarterback competition between Matt Cassel and E.J. Manuel and Tyrod Taylor. He says Tyrod Taylor has a very strong arm that got his attention.
Man, I see it every day. You know, dude got cannon, just like everybody else. You know, all the other quarterbacks, and everybody out here slinging that ball. And Tyrod definitely has an arm, and he got hands too.
Did that element surprise you, or were you aware he had that type of a quality to him?
I was definitely aware of it. You know, as soon as we picked him up, I went and looked the stuff up, and you know, just to get familiar with him. And you know, he definitely displays that. So looking forward to it.
What about EJ? What changes, if any, have you seen in him so far throughout this short time?
EJ, one of my great friends. He's just confident. He knows what he's doing, and just like all the other guys, he's ready to compete, and he'll be ready.
You mentioned staying out of the training room. I mean, obviously, sometimes that's out of your control, but what can you control in working toward that, and what have you maybe changed to try and do that?
As far as what? Staying out of the training room?
Yeah.
Just taking care of my body. Not really. A lot of the injuries that I had were very minor, and it was kind of blown up a little bit. But part of that has to do with me being in the training room so often. Really, like the little nagging injuries, I just got to suck it up and just, you know, play through it.
Might it help that you've had a full off season as opposed to last year preparing for the draft, you know, just to prepare?
Almost definitely. You know, this is definitely a wonderful opportunity for me going into year three as opposed to year two, and getting a full off season under my belt. You know, just getting the hang of everything and learning the offense and being more football minded. It's definitely made for a better transition this year.
How much did you learn from last year? I know you had high expectations, had to have been, you know, tough mentally at times. What did you learn that you can carry into this year?
To set the bar high, but don't set any expectations for people. You know what I mean? Don't put too much trust in the things. Just rely on my faith in God and, you know, my faith in myself and believe in myself and not really get down on, you know, the truth, what the truth might be. You know what I mean? Just stay positive minded and stay grounded and not really worry about outside influences.
Marquise Goodwin at age 24, he'll be 25 late this upcoming season. Buffalo's third round draft pick a couple of years ago going into his third year. Clearly, he gets it. He knows that it's time to produce and it's time for him to put up some numbers to stay healthy. And he's in a competition, no question about that, on a pretty crowded receiving group on this Buffalo Bills roster. Marquise Goodwin talking to the media earlier this week. And you heard from Rex Ryan talking about Marquise Goodwin. A lot of interesting cases like that on this Buffalo roster. The roster is better, quite frankly, than it has been in several years. And so people who've been on the roster, people who've been productive on the roster may have to hustle to maintain their roster spot moving forward. All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to talk about a rookie. We're going to be on the line with rookie Tony Stewart, linebacker from Clemson, one of Buffalo's sixth-round draft picks 2 weeks ago. Tony Stewart is part of the Bills' rookie tour around Western New York today. We'll talk with him about that and get his thoughts on his first couple of weeks as a Buffalo Bill. We're on the air until 9 o'clock tonight, and the phone lines are open, 803-0550 or toll-free outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. It is the John Murphy Show. We're presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Welcome back to John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO on this Friday night. We're live at One Bills Drive, and although there was no practice today, Bills rookies did get together today for the 8th annual Bills Rookie Tour of Western New York. And joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline, Buffalo's 6th-round draft pick, the linebacker from Clemson, Tony Stewart, part of that rookie tour today. Tony, thanks very much for coming on the air with us tonight. Is the tour over, or are you guys still together?
Well, we're all still together right now. We're getting ready to leave the restaurant. But thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for coming on. So dinner to wind up the day. What did you think after you've been here, a week and a half or so? Was this your first real look at Western New York today, this afternoon?
Yeah, it actually was my first real look at it. You know, obviously, I've been here, and really all I've seen was the apartment that we've been staying in, and right down the road was the stadium and the facility. So I hadn't seen much, but being able to tour around the day, I mean, you really get a feel for what's this place all about. And, you know, it's a very community-based place. There's plenty to do. We got to go visit Niagara Falls. That was such an awesome thing to do. It was a lot of fun. And just being able to kind of drive around the town and everything,
yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a different place.
Tony, you're a native of Hastings, Florida, near St. Augustine, Florida. Had you ever been to Niagara Falls, seen it before?
Absolutely not. It was definitely a first, and it was an awesome experience.
Ever seen anything like that? They don't have waterfalls like that down in Florida. They don't have them anywhere, really, now that we think of it.
No, not like that. That's a different kind of place. But, you know, it's just very, very different from what I've come from and what I've seen. So, I mean, just being able to have this experience, it's awesome.
I got to tell you, Tony, I've lived here my whole life, and I'm about twice as old as you, and Niagara Falls never gets old. It always takes your breath away when you walk over there and see that, isn't it? It's amazing.
I believe it. I mean, you can sit there and just stare at it for hours. It's just one of those things that, like you said, it just never gets old.
You guys also visited New Era Cap Company downtown on Delaware Avenue. You could probably stare at some of those caps for hours too, right? Did you find anything you liked?
Absolutely, yeah. I actually found a cap. I found one that I liked, and I didn't know they had my size. So I started looking at other caps, and then I went back to it, and I asked like three different people just to make sure they didn't have my size for sure.
What kind of cap did you get? Which one did you like?
I got a solid red Buffalo Bills cap.
Cool.
It's pretty awesome. I think it'll match a bunch of stuff that I have. I wear a lot of red. Red's my favorite color, so it's perfect.
Hey, Tony, you and your rookie teammates paid a visit to Women and Children's Hospital this afternoon.
Yeah.
What was that all about? What'd you do there?
Man. That was awesome. You know, I've been fortunate enough to be able to visit a decent amount of children's hospitals, and just being able to kind of visit there and talk to the children who are sick, man, it really is an honor, because a lot of us don't realize it and we take it for granted. But I mean, we're lucky to be healthy, and some of these kids aren't, and just being able to kind of just visit them and put smiles on their faces and talk to them, and just to kind of make them a little bit happier, add a little bit of joy to their self. It's an awesome experience.
Tony, I haven't done the rookie tour in a while, like maybe 5, 6, 7 years. Last time I did it, they do a really good job on the bus as you drive from place to place of kind of telling you what you're looking at and explaining a little bit about Buffalo's history. Did they do that again today?
Yeah, they did. The ladies that we have, they do an awesome job of letting us know what is what. And, you know, they're going to put together a list and email it to us of the things that we can do and the different restaurants and holes in the walls and just places to visit.
Yeah. Hey, did you see anything today that you thought, I got to come back here? Was there anything that stuck out and made you think, all right, I'm coming back to get another look at this?
Well, honestly, really, I definitely want to get back to Niagara Falls.
Yeah.
Definitely going to take my girlfriend there. And then the lake. I mean, I'm a big water guy. You know, coming from Florida, I was always at the beach. So, I mean, it's awesome to be able to have a source of water around.
Yeah. Yeah, we got lots of water. No question about that. Tony Stewart is on the line with us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Linebacker from Clemson, Buffalo's 6th-round draft pick. One of just two draft picks who haven't signed a contract yet, Tony. That'll get done sooner or later, I would think, huh?
Absolutely.
Don't let that hold you up. Hey, Tony, tell me about the first couple of weeks here with the Bills in practice, first with the rookie minicamp last weekend and then with the veterans this week. What's that been like for you?
It's really fast. It's a change of pace, but, I mean, it's been very, very fun. You know, it's a dream come true, and being able to kind of be in this situation, it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and really I'm just trying to make the most of it.
Where do they have you playing these days, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, a little bit of both?
I'm playing the inside weak side linebacker.
And how do you feel about that? Are you comfortable there?
I've actually played the inside linebacker and weak side the majority of my life, so I feel very comfortable there.
Hey, Tony, one of the things that 2 weeks ago when the draft came up, one of the things that popped out were the injuries you had to fight through at Clemson. Yeah. Actually, even before you went to Clemson, you had, ACL injuries on the same knee or separate knees?
Well, I tore my left one in high school, and I tore my right one my freshman year at Clemson. A bunch of teams seemed very worried about that, but, I mean, I've played on these knees for 3 years without any problems at all. So, you know, it's something that I've been past for 3 years now. I think Buffalo being able to give me this opportunity, I'll be able to show a lot of teams and show Buffalo that I'm not going to have any more problems with my knees.
Some of these draft picks have to juggle this time up here with finishing up at school. You have your degree already, right? Parks, Recreation, and Tourism?
Yes, sir, absolutely. I had to graduate before I left.
So how did you manage to do that? I know that it takes a lot of time to play big-time college football. How did you manage to finish off the degree also?
Man, really, I just tried to use the resources that I had. Clemson does a great job with their academics as well as their athletics, and I used my resources, and I actually had to battle through my last semester taking 19 hours. It's a huge load for me, and I took on a more permanent role in the defense, so it was just it was just a long, long semester, man. I had to stay focused and just do what I had to do. I knew that I didn't want to have to come back to school after I got done being eligible for sports. So, I did what I had to do. I stayed focused. I worked as hard as I could, and I had a bunch of help from my girlfriend and my advisors and, my learning specialists and my tutors. So I just used my resources.
Hey, Tony, it was only 13 days ago that you were drafted sixth round by the Buffalo Bills. I'm sure a lot has happened since then, but have you thought back to that day, how it went down, where you were drafted and the feeling you got when you heard your name called on that Saturday of draft weekend?
Man, I've looked back on it a few times, and it's still hard to believe. But, man, I'm up here practicing with these guys, and I'm around all the other draft picks, and it's still hard to believe that it happened.
Did you think you might not get drafted?
I tried to come into the draft without any expectations. I had heard from plenty of teams that I could draft it, and I just tried not to worry about that.
Yeah.
So I just really tried to have no expectation at all.
Tony, I think, I've just known about you for a couple of weeks, but when you look at what you've been through, the knee injury in high school, the knee injury your first year at Clemson, and the fact that in high school you were like one of the top recruits in the country coming out of your high school down there in Central Florida, you've had more than your share of adversity at a very young age. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely.
What's that meant to you? What's that done for you?
It's just taught me how to weather the storm, to push through the tough times. I've always felt like a very self-motivated person. I've always felt like I could kind of go through anything. And, just going through those tough times really showed me that I could. I had a huge, huge support cast around me, which made everything a lot easier.
Are you looking forward to getting back on the field, getting back to work with the Bills players next week, Tony?
I am.
All right. Well, good luck to you. Thank you for coming on with us tonight. Have fun in the end of your rookie tour. We appreciate you taking a few minutes out to talk with us tonight.
Yeah, no problem at all. Thank you guys for having me.
Okay.
Again.
Tony Stewart, Clemson, sixth-round draft picker in the Bills. Linebacker, as you heard him say, he's mostly on the inside now. Weak side, inside linebacker through a couple of weeks of workouts with the Buffalo Bills. Tony joined us via the Subway Fresh Tank Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. The rookie tour, pretty cool. I haven't gone out on it in a while, but I covered it a couple of years ago. It is a pretty cool thing, and it sort of opens your eyes if you're a Buffalo lifer like many of us as to what goes on around here that you sort of take for granted until somebody actually points it out to you. And the history. I hope there's at least a couple of players who have a sense for the history as they make their way around, because the people who run the rookie tour do a great job of spelling out exactly what went on here, what went on there, what this means, why this is the way this is. We should all do it, all of us. Western New Yorkers at some point. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back with more. It is the John Murphy Show. We're coming to you live from One Bills Drive tonight, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Very good to hear that he had a good time out there, Tony Stewart, with the Bills rookie tour. It sounds like they did. I like the fact that it's a great tradition. 8 years now, 8 years old, the Bills rookie tour for the draft picks, the undrafteds, and they get a really good taste of Western New York, including Niagara Falls and everything else. So, good. I'm glad they had fun with that. Guy who's been in town for more than a year now, Cyrus Quanjo. We've kind of tracked his progress during the offseason, if you recall. Back in February, we had him on the show, and he talked about working in Scottsdale, Arizona, with LeCharles Bentley. And then we had LeCharles Bentley on the radio show, and he was raving about Cyrus Quanjo's work as Quanjo tries to get his professional football career going. Last year's second-round draft pick out of Alabama. Quanjo's had a couple of weeks of work here with the veterans in the off-season workouts, including the voluntary minicamp a week or two ago. Quanjo was asked about his confidence level after really not seeing the field at all in his rookie campaign.
Yeah, it's tough, you know. Honestly, it's tough, but I mean, confidence comes when you work hard. We work really hard, and it'll just, you just come out there knowing you did it 1,000 times, you could do it 1 more time, you know. So it's just another day.
Did you feel like you got a little bit of a raw deal last year with the coaching staff not showing much faith in you, really, from the start? It seemed like it started right away. Do you feel like you got kind of a raw deal?
They had to do what they had to do. That's the past, you know. I'm not really worried about that. You can't live in the past.
On that note, they moved you around a little bit last year. Was that a little bit maybe too much on your plate to start your career, and maybe now you just stick to tackle and see how things go?
I think how it benefited me is it taught me how to be versatile, you know. It taught me how to do pretty much anything on the O-line. So that's why I trained on this offseason. I trained everything. But it seems as if when I came up this year, I'm only getting tackle reps, so I'm more focused on that.
What is what do you get out of what happened last year? What do you take away from that personally, and how might it either motivate you or not motivate? You know, how what do you take away from that?
I mean, it's all a learning experience. It was all a learning experience for me personally. It's just that I learned that you can't make mistakes, so you just got to work really hard in the NFL. You know, in college, you could make a mistake here, make a mistake there. You're stronger, faster, smarter than the guy. You can't get away with it. But here, it's professionals, you know, a bunch of professionals. So, you know, it takes a lot of work, and, you know, this is my job. So that's what I got from it.
Cyrus Quanjo, as he approaches his second year in the league. His brother Ari was drafted, Ari Quanjo, guard from Alabama, older brother, but a year behind him in football terms, drafted in the 4th round by Washington in the NFL. And Cyrus Quanjo was asked about his brother and asked about himself as he moves into his second year.
I'm excited he got to go to D.C. You know, it's funny because that was the only hat he brought there, because my oldest brother, by the name of Michael, he's the biggest Washington, D.C. fan, the biggest fan. Yeah, he still wore the Buffalo Bills jersey when I got drafted. But he was the biggest Washington, D.C. fan. So my brother, Ari, the one that in the NFL right now, he brought an extra Washington, D.C. hat for my oldest brother. Just, hey, here's a hat. And turns out he ended up wearing the hat by the end of the day, so... It was a great moment, and it's back. We're from around that area, so, you know, all of his friends, all his family, you know, contacted him, excited for him to come down, and it was a good moment for the family, for the Quanjo family.
How big was it for him to have you as a part of that process leading up to the draft?
I mean, he's his own man, and he made his own decisions, but, you know, I kind of let him know early, you know, what the NFL is about, and how serious you got to take it. And I mean, he's already a serious guy, and I mean, he's great. He's a great player. He's not gonna have any problems. He's gonna do great. But you know, I guess we push each other while we worked out, while we trained. We push each other a lot, which we did since childhood. You know, we pushed each other since childhood. That's how we got here, and I think that was a good impact on both of us.
Hey, with only 3 tackles on this roster right now, I mean, 3 veteran guys, I guess you could say, you feel pretty good about your odds, at least?
Yeah, but you can't really think about that type of stuff because you never know what's going on upstairs. You just got to come in with the attitude that you're going to do your best. You're gonna touch your potential, and whatever happens, happens, you know. You never know. Somebody might get hurt. You know, we might draft. We might pick somebody else up. You never know what's going on until, you know. You never, even in, during the season, you never know. So you just got to go in with the attitude. You got to work really hard. And whatever the decision they make upstairs, they make upstairs.
Cyrus Quanjo, we'll be watching him when we get a chance to watch the on-field workouts in the weeks and months ahead because, I don't know, I feel almost invested in him after he was a guest on the show in February and after we talked with LeCharles Bentley, who had him at his offensive line camp in Scottsdale, Arizona. I feel like, I don't want to give up on Cyrus Quanjo. I hope he's got something to offer this team on the offensive line. All right, coming up in the next hour, are the Bills really bona fide playoff contenders in 2015? Well, one of the NFL insiders on ESPN, Casey Joyner, says yes, and he's a post-up that says explains why the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015. Also in the next hour, we'll talk about the Pro Football Researchers Association and their Hall of Very Good, and the phone line's still open for your comments on anything at all about the Bills or the NFL. Got one more hour to go. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO, live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Let's go! Let's go!
And this crowd is on its feet, and it is pandemonium. And that's only the half of it.
Halftime is over. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO.
Keep spilling your blood for one another. Let's go get it now. Let's go. Bills on three. 1, 2, 3. Bills.
Safety. 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 Unbelievable.
The John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO, the official convenience store of the Buffalo Bills.
That's right. We're still spilling our blood for one another here in the studio, the John Murphy Show, and it's a mess. It is the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO on a Friday night. Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550, the number, or toll-free from outside Buffalo. Toll-free call at 1-888-550-2550. Your thoughts on what the Bills are up to? Are they really a playoff team? Why the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015? Spell it out for us. Our next guest coming up in a few minutes, Casey Joyner, ESPN insider, NFL writer for ESPN, and the man behind the website, The Football Scientist. He's regarded as one of the pioneers of applying analytics to football. Casey Joyner has an ESPN post up today that explains why he thinks the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015. Do you think that's realistic? And if so, why? Why will the Bills make the playoffs in 2015? 803-0550, the number, outside Buffalo, 1-888-550-2550. According to Casey Joyner, the reasons he gives, number one, Rex Ryan. He says Rex Ryan is the effectively the Billy Martin of the NFL, skilled in taking talented teams and making bombastic proclamations and turning talented teams into better teams. He also talks about the Buffalo defense and the skill position players on the Buffalo offense. We'll talk with Casey Joyner coming up a little bit later on this hour. And at the bottom of the hour, the Hall of Very Good. You all know about the Hall of Fame, the Pro Football Hall of Fame. How about the Hall of Very Good? Well, the Pro Football Researchers Association does this every year. They anoint a Hall of Very Good, and they've got a new class. And we'll talk with John Turley, one of the principals in the Pro Football Researchers Association, about the Hall of Very Good. He also is an American Football League historian, so that's coming up this hour as well. But the phone line's open for your thoughts, 803-0550, the number, or outside Buffalo, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. We've already heard from six-round draft pick Tony Stewart about the rookie tour and about his approach to the upcoming season. We had a tweet just came in, Nevermore Sports, who said, based on your rookie interviews, I want all these guys to make it. Yeah, I get that. You know, you talk to these guys, you listen to them talk about their path to the NFL. Many of them drafted just a couple of weeks ago. And you think, yeah, I'd root for that guy. You always find a undrafted guy or two that you kind of have a stake in moving forward. So that, to me, that's one of the fun parts of preseason and the offseason, but especially when you get to training camp and preseason, just finding the guys who maybe have an uphill climb or an interesting backstory and watch them fight for their lives to try to make it to the NFL. The rookie class looks pretty good. They've been here now for a couple of weeks, the rookie mini. Well, actually, only about 8 or 9 days. The rookie mini camp was last week. Rex Ryan, when he met the media earlier this week, was asked for his impressions of the rookie class and what he saw after working with them for several days.
Well, I was impressed with them. I think mentally they're on top of it, so I think that's it. They also, you know, they realize that, hey, I better step up that way, or it's going to be tough for me to perform physically. But that was it's a good group. I think guys, you know, they were definitely in their books. And, you know, they're running around. We never did the team deal. You know, I think when we looked at it, for us, you don't know how much training guys have done. You don't know, you know, guys been on the banquet circuit. You guys been traveling around, going to different clubs. So it's tough. I never wanted to expose our team to those, you know, 11-on-11 situations. We did run some skelly things. But I kind of wanted to, you know, prevent some of that if we could. But I thought it was good from a mental standpoint. That was the important thing to us. Trying to get them ready to be out here, albeit just on, you know, going through air, but at least mentally to where they're ready to step in and have a chance to, you know, not be too far behind the veteran players.
Did any of them pop out and catch your eye at all?
Well, I think, you know, Darby initially, you know, Ronald, his quickness, change of direction and things like that was impressive. O'Leary kind of caught a bunch of balls. You know, those are the main two guys that jumped out. You know, Tony Stewart, it's a little, you know, you're doing 7-on-7, not as much inside run, how physical and all that stuff. You really can't show that in these camps. And of course, with John Miller, you know, he's just doing the individual things. But, you know, we got him in there. Heck, I saw him today. He's running with the first team. You know, that doesn't mean that he stays there, but that's where he's already fitting in to where you put him out there, you know, with the ones. And mentally, that's pretty impressive that he goes in it wasn't like we had to slow things down because he was in there.
Rex Ryan talking to the media 2 days ago on Wednesday. Anybody else have the thought run through their head when he talked about John Miller? He said, we got him in there with the ones, running with the first team. Coach Ryan said, quote, that doesn't mean he'll stay there. Anybody think like I did? Maybe he will. Maybe he never comes out of the first team. Miller in there at guard with the first team. I don't know. It could happen. Miller stays in there at guard, incognito with the other guard spot, Wood in the middle, and then the tackles. Cordy Glenn on one side, Chantrell Henderson on the other. Again, still to be heard from Cyrus Kwanjo, obviously, and some of the others, including Cyril Richardson. But maybe John Miller never comes out of the lineup. That thought occurred to me listening to Rex Ryan on Wednesday. Ryan also talked about where they are now a couple of weeks into the offseason. They're this week a voluntary offseason conditioning week. Another one of those coming up next week. Eventually they'll get to organized team activity and a little more work on the field and in teamwork. And eventually around mid-June they get to the mandatory workout or the mandatory mini camp. Rex Ryan talked about the fact that they really haven't got into many team drills yet, but they are getting in good conditioning work.
Especially as a new staff, you get to teach your systems. So I think that's a big benefit. You know, you're going through, albeit at a walkthrough pace, but you're doing your individual drills. So they're getting to be with their coaches that way. You put in your systems, you know, and so when you do finally get to kick in there and kick it into gear, your guys are ready to go. From a conditioning standpoint and a strength, you know, strength and conditioning standpoint, you know, I really like our strength coaches. You know, when you get in there, I think it's an advantage for us when anytime our players are in the building, I don't think you can go out somewhere else and get a better, you know, a better teacher, a better system than what we already have in place here, you know, with Eric and them. So I think obviously that's good. I feel, you know, you look around, it's like, you know, our guys are yoked up pretty good. You know, so I like that. The tough part is when you leave, is now you have a month, you know, before you see your players, probably five weeks before you see your players. And that's the tough thing because they're either going to get better or worse or, you know, maybe stay the same. But it's you want to get our guys better, which is hard to do. But right now they're getting a great base for their strength and conditioning, and they're getting a great grasp of our systems.
Rex Ryan talking Wednesday, and that's where they're at in this offseason. They're building the base for strength, conditioning. They have been exposed to elements of the playbook, not a whole lot of teamwork yet. Piece by piece, they try to build this thing. And every once in a while, it's important to take a step back and look at the big picture. That's what our next guest has done. He is an NFL writer for ESPN. He is the man behind the website, The Football Scientists. He's considered one of the pioneers of the analytics approach to pro football discussion. And he joins us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline right now, KC Joyner, ESPN NFL writer. KC, thanks very much for being on the air with us. We really appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate the invite.
This is what got our attention, the headline on your post on ESPN.com today. Why the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015. That's a head-turner for any Buffalo Bills follower. And you start with Rex Ryan and what I thought was a pretty interesting comparison between Rex Ryan and the late manager Billy Martin. Tell us about that, KC.
Yeah, I'm kind of an old-school baseball fan. I remember back in the day, Billy would go through and he went from team to team. He got pretty often, but every time he joined a new team, you can look at the eight times that he took over a team and had a full season the following season, and in all those cases but one, his team's improved by at least 12 games. I mean, the guy was a turnaround artist, and he did it through a lot of charisma, a lot of charm, and very much a hyper-aggressive approach. You remember Billy Ball was a very, we're going to tack on the base pass and things. And I was thinking about that as I'm writing this Buffalo Bills article, and I thought, that's a good comparison because it's exactly what Rex Ryan does. Really hyper-aggressive approach. He's going to be, get after people on defense, and he's very extremely charismatic, gets his players to buy in. So you look at what he did with the Jets early on, where he turned around and things. I thought, he's taking over Buffalo situations kind of the same way. So I just thought there might be a comparison there where he can take the Bills and do what he did to them what he did to the Jets.
Yeah, I mean, we see, obviously Rex doesn't have the job turnover that Billy Martin had, but and probably hopes that he doesn't have to as he moves forward through his career. But what have you seen about Rex so far as Bills coach that lets you make that comparison? When you talk about hyper-aggressive, tell me what you're thinking of there.
Well, I'm thinking last year his defenses weren't very good because, frankly, he didn't have the horses. And there's only so much you can do in play calling to make up for a lack of talent. When they take over the Bills, if there's nothing else, they've got a ton of defensive talent. I mean, you just look at the metrics that they had last year. I mean, they ranked first in a metric ESPN that was called Total QBR. It's a measurement of productivity in the passing game. And, it put places weights on, game situation and down and distance, things of that nature. And they were tops in the league in that category. That's a really tough category to excel in. And they did great in yards per game, interception percentage, sack percentage, made a lot of big plays in defense. And you look at the defense already being at that level, and you say, okay, now you've got Rex Ryan, who's a really creative defensive play caller. Well, he can at least equal what they did last year there, and you would think he might be able to improve upon that.
KC Joyner is our guest, NFL writer for ESPN, the man behind the website, The Football Scientist. There's one defensive metric that caught my attention, KC, in your post, and it's you call it the disputed dropback percentage metric, and the Bills were very good at that. Can you talk about what that metric is and how the Bills measure up?
Yep, the disrupted dropback percentage metric measures how often a defense posts a sack, a pass defense, an interception, or bats a ball down. That could be batted at the line of scrimmage, or it could be a little bit downfield. Basically, a lot of teams will call these splash plays, where you're doing something that's making some sort of impact. Now, the Bills finished second in the league last year in this category, and they had a disruptive dropback on 18.7% of the opposing team's dropbacks. To frame that another way, nearly one out of five times last year, when you drop back against the Bills, they were making some sort of a disruptive dropback. They were going to get a sack, a pick, knock a pass down or something. It was going to be a negative play for the other team. And that's just one in five. If you're going up against any offense and you can know nearly one in five times we're going to do something big against you when you throw the football, it's going to make the other team want to run the ball. And that's a big plus in today's NFL.
Yeah, that seems like a pretty good number for the Bills, 18.7%. Any idea, KC, what the league average or mean was in the disrupted drop back percentage?
If memory serves correct, it was just over 10%. The league leader was the Eagles, and they were in 19.2%, I want to say, and the league average is usually around 11 or 12%, which doesn't sound like a big difference between 11 and 12%, but if you're at 11%, and that's one out of nine plays that you're making that kind of impact instead of one out of five plays. So, I mean, it's a really big difference to be where they are. So to be able to keep it at that level, I think actually if Rex, and it depends on the game situations too, because depending on if the Bills can play with a lead, but if they can give their defense a lead, I think they could push it up to 20% this year.
Wow. And this is what I like about your analysis, Casey, and you probably do this on a regular basis on the website, the Football Scientist. Not only do you look at the numbers, but you also point to Jerry Hughes and the Bills' re-signing of Jerry Hughes as a measure of that metric. I mean, let's face it, these are real-life people who make those metrics come alive, right?
Yeah, you can't. I mean, again, Rex, last year, his defense didn't play very well because you don't have the horses. You've got to have the horse. In fact, Bill Walsh used to say that you can't cover up personal weaknesses in defense, because play calling wise, the opposing, if you get a good opposing offensive coordinator, they can single player out regardless of who it is. So you've got to have the horses to bring him back. A guy like Jerry Hughes, that was the big thing for the offseason. Is when you saw him come back, it was okay. That's the sort of signing that says okay, they're keeping their best guys in house, because hey, you can try and improve by getting other players from other teams, but what you really want to do is improve in house. I don't think Hughes is the sort of guy. In fact, I think Hughes is the sort of player who, he gets his money. It's not going to stop the way he plays. He just seems to be a high motor guy who's motivated by doing well on the field rather than just money. So I think it's a great signing from a multiple perspectives.
There's one more metric I want to ask you about, and it deals with the Buffalo defense. It's defensive expected points added metric. What's that all about, and how do the Bills measure up there?
This is an ESPN stats and information metric, and what it boils down to is it measures the scoreboard impact that these defensive plays have on a game. So, and it measures, again, down in distance, where you are in a game. In other words, if you make a defensive stop, if you're up 35-0 and you stop the other team to like a 2-yard gain at first down, that doesn't give him any point value because, given what the game situation is. But if it's, if you're 3rd-and-2 late in the game and you're up by 1 point, then of course it's going to have a much bigger impact. Where the Bills rank, they had a 72.4 metric, which means they're putting up, that the defense is accounting for about 72 extra points based on, down the distance and how they performed and such. That was the tops in the league. It was better than Seattle, and it was better than Houston. And Ryan, his first three teams in New York had DEPA totals that were very either similar or better to this mark here. I like the idea of being better because, again, if he gets a defense that's already playing to this level and he can add something to it, he might be able to push that 72.4 mark maybe to 100, because the league median there is, if I remember correctly, it's around 25, something of that nature. And if you could start pushing that towards 80 and 90, that means your defense is putting up essentially an extra 10 touchdowns for you. So that makes up for a lot of maybe any weaknesses you might have in offense.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with Casey Joyner, the Football Scientist website, one of the pioneers in analytic research in NFL football. He wrote a post for ESPN.com, why the Bills will make the playoffs in 2015. It's not all defense. You like some of the skill position players on the Buffalo offense too, Casey.
Yeah, interesting thing about the Buffalo running game, because I really like the addition of LeSean McCoy. I have a metric called good blocking rate. Mm-hmm. It measures how often an offense is giving its ball carriers quality run blocking, which basically means you're not allowing the defense to do anything to disrupt a rush attempt. They finished 16th in the league in that category last year. I know the run game got a lot of, it wasn't that good in the blocking things, but the blocking actually was average. Not great, but average. And the problem for them was that they finished last in good blocking yards per attempt, which means when they gave the running backs good blocking, they were the least productive team in the league on those carries. They had a 7.0-yard mark in that category. LeSean McCoy last year had an 8.3-yard mark, which is kind of actually low for him because he's usually pushing closer towards 9. Even if he stays at 8.3, he's going to be able to, assuming they can get similar levels of blocking this year, he's going to be able to raise that good blocking yards per attempt mark closer to 7.5, 7.7, 7.8, which is the median in the league. And he can get that perceived weakness last year up to being more of a strength and, and being able to be the sort of team that Rex wants to be, where on offense he wants to wear the other defense down, with the running game and not to lean so much in the pass. So I think this is going to be a great move for them.
So because the perception here was that the offensive line just didn't serve the running game well last year, you're telling me the metrics show that blocking was not a problem. And in fact, when the Bills had good blocking, and this is the good blocking yards per attempt metric, that it was what happened on those plays? The running backs didn't hit the holes, or what happened on those plays to make it such a rough metric for Buffalo?
That's usually what it is. It could be running back mistakes. A hole is there, and you maybe have a 4-yard game block for you, and you decide, I want to try and hit a home run, and you cut it back to where away from where your blocking is. It can also be a matter of, you gave good blocking at the first level, but now you get to the second level and the linebacker maybe sheds a block and gets downfield and makes a tackle, and what could have been a 10-yard gain is now an 8-yard gain or a 5-yard gain. Or it could be safeties coming up too, and that could be where, a lot of times you're going to put a hat in a hat in the running game and you're going to have a safety being the only guy who can stop the running back. Well, the great running backs or even the good running backs are going to be able to make that safety miss, you know, often enough, or at least, you know, take a cut to cut down the angle, you know, not let the safety come up and put it to a 5-yard gain instead of like a 15-yard gain. And I think that's what McCoy's going to be able to do is say, okay, when he gets to that level and he gets one-on-one with the safety, he's going to be able to make that safety missed often enough to where you're going to be able to move that number up.
Hey, Casey, this is a line in your analysis of the Bills that I think most Bills fans would agree with and most Bills fans would welcome. You say the Buffalo passing game doesn't need to be great in 2015. It just needs to be adequate. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, because they finished, the problem for them is, in fact, really what they need to do is they need to get better on their short passing game. ESPN's total QBRs, you can, you know, break it down by short and long passes, and they actually didn't do so well in short passes, and that's somewhere, something where Matt Castle could be an upgrade for them. But Castle doesn't do very well at long passes. That's his weakness. And I think that's why they've tried to stockpile up vertical targets, because Charles Clay is a good vertical target. Harvin can hit some big plays, but the person I'm most interested in is Sammy Watkins. Sammy Watkins, when he came out of college last year, he had, in his last season at Clemson, he had a metric line for how he did on vertical passes, stretch vertical passes, when he faced a cornerback, a bunch of different measurements I have. I've never seen a set of metrics as good as Sammy Watkins had, and I've been doing this for 12 years. I've never seen anybody even come close. I literally had to go through the charts and do a double check on the numbers, because I even a triple check. I was like, this can't be right, and it was. He was that good. That's not what we saw last year. He was kind of slowed with injuries, and you know there were different issues for him where he wasn't quite to that level. But I think if he stays healthy and they can give him, you know, get a good running game going and be able to open up the defense for him and get him closer, you know, to, you know, the opportunities that he had at Clemson, I still think the sky's the limit for this guy.
And Casey, actually, your name came up. I saw an article in the Buffalo News around the time of the draft a couple of weeks ago where you were asked about the Bills trade up to get Sammy Watkins a year ago. And I think you said that I think you kind of applauded the move, the big trade, the fact that the Bills took themselves out of this year's first round.
The thing is, if you take it off the 1 year situation, you know, off of where we're at right now, and you said, hey, this is, you know, if you said, okay, today is where it ends and Sammy Watkins' career is over, and this is, then of course you'd say it probably wasn't a good move, but I still think this guy's limit. It will not surprise me, and it's going to take good quarterback play for it to happen, but it would not surprise me that if we're talking a couple, 3 years down the road, if you're not saying that Sammy Watkins is as good, if not better, than Odell Beckham Jr., I just think he's got that kind of talent. He's got to be healthy, and he's got to get good quarterback play. But the things he's capable of doing on short passes, long passes, and every route you can think of on the tree, the things he's capable of doing put him in that category. And I think the Bills are down the road going to be able to say, well, maybe it wasn't worth it after year one, but years two, three, four, five, and six, this guy, we're just going to show you he was worth trading at pick for.
Hey, Casey, if you can, put it all together for us, why the Bills will make the playoffs and how all of these metrics add up to the end of Buffalo's 15-year playoff drought, in your mind.
Well, they're going to have the powerful defense. I think their defense might actually be a little better than next year. Again, all this is predicated on they don't get just some slew of horrible injuries or something of that nature, you know, assuming they stay reasonably healthy. But the defense will be better. They were able to get a 9-7 record last year with this sort of defense. Their running game will be improved with McCoy, and I think overall their running game will just be improved. I think McCoy's going to be able to move them up to where they're going to be a stronger team there. I think their short passing game is going to be better with Castle, and I think that Watkins being healthy and having all those other elements of the short passing game and the running game are better. I think you're going to be able to open up the vertical passing game. And I didn't even touch in the article how good their special teams were last year. And the special teams don't necessarily have to be quite as good, because I think they were third in special teams expected points added. But if they can even stay close to that caliber level, you've got a strength there. You add all that together, and I got to say this. I pitched this article to my editor before the Tom Brady suspension came up, before that even was there. So I happen to think that even if Brady gets a zero-game suspension, that they, you know, that they're going to be able to make the playoffs. But if he's suspended for those games, that gives the Bills a chance to, you know, win that game against New England. And, you know, I think it can move up into that double-digit area. You go from 9-7 to 10-6, maybe 11-5. You get to that level, you're going to make the playoffs.
Casey, when I hear you go through all the metrics, it sounds like this is the type of analysis you provide on your website, The Football Scientist. How can fans use your website?
Well, you can go to thefootballscientist.com, and I've got material there. Most of my material is posted on ESPN.com's insider section. I do work for their NFL section. I do work for their college football section, fantasy football section, and I do some articles on the draft. So that's where you can find most of my material there. And then, you know, you go to my site, they've got some other material there as well. But they can also follow me on Twitter at Casey Joyner TFS, or on Facebook, Facebook fan page, which is also Casey Joyner TFS.
Do you think it's mostly applicable to fantasy players, or can non-fantasy players get a lot out of your information also?
Both. I have pen material over the years in both areas. I do a lot of work with the fantasy realm, but I do a lot of articles like this, which are definitely, can be applied to either fantasy or non-fantasy. I think you almost have to look at fantasy today, too, as if you cover anything in football, you're going to be covering fantasy football, essentially. And you could look at the other way around, too, that even if you're writing fantasy material, it can apply to a regular NFL coverage as well.
Yeah, well, this article got our attention. Casey, thank you for coming on the air tonight to talk about it. We appreciate it.
Hey, appreciate the time.
Okay, Casey Joyner, ESPN insider, NFL writer, the man behind the website, The Football Scientist, regarded as one of the pioneers of the application of analytics to pro football analysis. His article on ESPN.com, Why the Bills Will Make the Playoffs in 2015, and he enumerated some of the reasons with the analytics involved in proving that point. We'll see. Casey joined us via the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. When we come back, we're going to go back into pro football history a little bit with John Turney from the Pro Football Researchers Association. Here till 9 tonight, the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. We're live at One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
On the air tonight till 9 o'clock, live from One Bills Drive, the John Murphy Show, presented by NOCO. We talked last segment about the upcoming Bills season, the 2015 season, and again, our thanks to Casey Joyner, an ESPN insider, who says the 2015 Buffalo Bills have what it takes to make the playoffs. But let's take a look back now, a little bit back into pro football history. There's a really accomplished and dedicated group that does that, the Professional Football's Researchers Association. We've had some of their folks on the air with us over the last few years. Joining us right now on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline is the co-chair of their awards committee, John Turney, all the way from New Mexico, right, John? That's where you are tonight?
Yeah, that's right. I've been a long-time New Mexican.
Now, thanks for being on the air with us tonight. Can you let our listeners know, who may not be familiar with the group, what the Pro Football Researchers Association is all about?
Well, yeah, no problem. The Researchers Association was founded in 1979 by a gentleman named Bob Carroll. And if you know the name Bob Carroll, you'll see that he was quite a prolific author and really did and pioneered much of the research of the early NFL, and we're talking pre-NFL in the 20s and in the 30s. And he started this organization, and it's dedicated to research and to preserve the history of pro football.
One of the things the association has done over the years, I guess since 2012 or 2002, is come up with the Hall of the Very Good. Not the Hall of Fame, but the Hall of the Very Good. Tell us what that's all about, if you would.
Well, what it was intended to do is honor outstanding players and coaches who aren't in the Hall of Fame and who have yet to be elected to the Hall of Fame. So it's that next level of player. Some of them actually were Hall of Fame players, and seven of them, I believe, were inducted after we put them in the Hall of Very Good, but that's the essence of it. These guys that had great, outstanding careers, but who have not been elected to the Hall of Fame.
It seems like if you're in the Hall of the Very Good and you get in the Pro Football Hall of Fame, maybe you should have your spot in the Hall of Very Good revoked, John, no?
Well, there was talk of that. We give them an asterisk. We did the 1961 Roger Maris thing with the 61 home runs. We note that they have been subsequently elected to the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Who are some of the more prominent members of the Hall of Very Good who subsequently became Hall of Famers? Anybody come to mind, John?
Well, Curly Culp just recently.
Yeah.
And you can talk about Carl Eller, who was one of our first inductees. And I always had a sneaking suspicion that it was kind of created for him, because he was a guy that was always on that final 15 list but didn't quite make it. And so Bob Carroll, who was the inventor of the Hall of Very Good, put him on it in that first class. Gene Hickerson is another one who comes to mind. Guys like that,
yeah.
Floyd Little, who recently went in, Bob Hayes, Chris Hamburger. So those are some names who have subsequently been elected, and I think others will eventually be elected to the Hall of Fame. Randy Gratishar, for example, might get in. So there's quite a few.
Yeah, we had one of your colleagues, Ken Crippen, on the show, I want to say almost a year ago, talking about another class, which included a couple of names in Bills history, Cookie Gilchrist and Daryl LaMonica, both of them in the Hall of Very Good, and both of them with deserving spots there. And I think a guy like LaMonica is on the would have to be on the cusp of Hall of Fame credentials, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, I would think so. And I think Cookie Gilchrist gets overlooked a lot because he was the premier fullback of the American Football League. And there was just a lot of things happening in the American Football League at the time. For some reason, a lot of guys had shorter careers. And at the time when they were becoming eligible for the Hall of Fame, career length was more important than it is, say, now.
Hmm.
But, yeah, Daryl LaMonica, Tom Sestak,
yep,
who's one of my favorites, who, when I did the sack research, came up with, in 1965, he came up 15 and a half sacks. Just awesome for a defensive tackle. Lou Saban is another one who we've got in the Hall of Very Good that has a Bills connection. In the future, I would expect somebody like Daryl Talley,
yeah,
to get in, and somebody like Kent Hull.
Those are
a couple names that come to mind.
Yeah, those are great names. When I look back at the roster of the Hall of Very Good, it just strikes me that there are a lot of old American Football League players on that roster. Maybe is there a sense that the AFL players, and in particular those who spent most, if not all, of their career in the AFL, maybe got overlooked by the electors for the Pro Football Hall of Fame?
I think early on that may have happened. I don't think there's any such biases in the current committee. But I think if you look back to the beginning, yeah, I think there was a little bit of that. I could tell you a off-the-record story, if you want, about that.
Sure, yeah.
We can put it on the record.
Yeah.
When in 1983, when Joe Namath was coming up for the Hall of Fame as a first ballot, the NFL guys knocked him and wouldn't put him in. So the next year, Fran Tarkenton comes up, and when it came time to discuss him, all the guys from AFL, the AFL voters, crossed their arms and just is a signal of what? Solidarity.
Huh.
That they weren't going to put him in. So then in 1985, Namath is voted in, and then vindicated in 1986, Tarkenton got in.
Huh.
So I think there was some animosity between the AFL and NFL voters early on.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find a more historic figure in the history of pro football than Joe Namath, really.
Yeah, and they stiffed him partly because of the AFL. I guess they could make that argument that he had a short career because he was hurt so often, but come on, it was Joe Namath.
Yeah.
First ballot, in my opinion.
Me too.
He had to wait 2 years, and it took a little bit of political maneuvering to make it happen.
We're on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline with John Turney. He is the co-chair of the awards committee for the Pro Football Researchers Association, and they do the Hall of Very Good. And here's a name that a more recent inductee into your Hall of Very Good, Ken Stabler, the Snake, quarterback for Oakland primarily, in New Orleans and Houston also. Boy, I would think he has credentials that might put him near Hall of Fame area, no?
Yeah, I think so too. He didn't get a lot of support from his own team. I don't know if there was animosity when he left, but I talked to a pretty high-ranking Raiders official years and years ago when I was doing the sack research. It wasn't Al Davis, it was someone else. But he said, yeah, Ken Stabler had a lot of good years, or a lot of great years. He said, but he had a lot of bad years too. So that gave me the impression that when writers would go to him or to Al Davis, that was the story they were getting on Stabler. And if you don't get in right away, sometimes you can get pushed to the back.
That's pretty amazing. Hey, John.
No,
go ahead.
I was going to say another Bill that I think eventually is going to end up definitely in the Hall of Very Good, and I think he's a Hall of Famer because not that many people know about it. But once Curly Culp broke the ice to put in a nose tackle, Fred Smirlis, I think, should be the next one in because he kind of changed the game in the way he played it. You saw him. You covered him.
Sure.
You know that he wasn't a middle guard that kind of played off the line. You remember him nose to nose. And he's still, at nose tackle, has played more games, started more games, gone to more Pro Bowls, and been named All-Pro than anybody that's ever played nose tackle in a 3-4 defense.
Well, that's a really good point. And I'll tell you, another guy I saw in your class of 2014, which I think is an inspired choice for the Hall of Very Good, Nolan Cromwell, a defensive back, primarily a safety with the Rams. I just remember, growing up watching the NFL back then, I remember Nolan Cromwell consistently just one of the finest players in the league year after year. He was a very good player.
Absolutely. He blew out a knee in 1984, and then he came back in 1985. Kind of had to finish his career at strong safety because he had lost that Olympic speed. You remember he was fourth in the 400-meter hurdles for the 1976 Montreal Olympics. He was one of the best high hurdlers low hurdlers in the country. Not only that, he could do all the decathlete things. And if you want to talk about his skills as a safety, he moved across the field like very few have ever seen. Had he not been injured, I think he would be on that kind of Ed Reed level, if you know what I mean. He just covered and covered and covered. So yeah, he was more than worthy, and I think what keeps him out of the Hall of Fame is his All-Pro streak ended after he came back from that knee injury, similar to Big Seth and some other players who just didn't make it into the Hall of Fame because of shorter careers.
Hey, John, it sounds like you spent a lot of time focusing on defensive linemen and sack records. In fact, I read a posting that you put up where you actually found a lost sack for Bruce Smith somewhere, huh?
Yeah, and you know what? You may be the guy that could answer the mystery. You covered the game. You were covering the Bills in 1985, I believe.
Yes, I was. Yep, did that game with Van Miller. Yep,
you and Mr. Miller, and there was a series of plays, and I put up the play by play for those listeners out there is a guy typing what happens in the game. I don't know if from your vantage point in the press box you could hear him typing, but he's writing down everything that happens. It's called a play by play, and there was a back to back sacks by a B. Smith. And then in the back, at the end of the game, there's a guy who totals all the sacks and tackles and all the things like that. And so they had given one to Don Smith, one to Bruce Smith, but later in the week it was corrected to give both to Bruce Smith. Now, I've checked with NFL Films. They don't have a clip of the play. I don't know if the radio program exists. I don't know how you guys called it. But if you remember, as a rookie, if Bruce Smith ever had back-to-back sacks, then he probably has 201, not 200. Now, how's that for some minutia?
Yeah, I hope you're not asking me to remember a game from 30 years ago, though, are you?
I'm not asking you that. It was rhetorical. And talking about Bruce Smith, part of what we do as researchers is a friend of mine, Nick Webster, is a member of the association, and we tracked tackles for loss. And Bruce Smith had 108 of those. So when you add his 200 sacks with 108 stuffs, is what Stats Inc. calls them, that's over 300 plays behind the line of scrimmage, and even the great Deacon Jones we tracked is slightly less than 300. So there's another little thing for Bruce Smith.
Hey, John, anyone listening tonight, if they're interested, how does one become a member of the Pro Football Researchers Association?
It's very easy. Just go to our website, profootballresearchers.com, and then there's a button there to join, and it's well worth it. You get 6 publications a year. You also get access to tons of information and articles going back 30 years, and they can just go to the website, sign up, and it's only $25 a year, and it's well worth it.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on the air tonight to talk with us about it, John. I always learn a lot from you guys when we have you on the show. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
John Turney is a member of the Pro Football Researchers Association, co-chair of their awards committee, and we were talking about the Hall of Very Good, I guess just a notch below the Pro Football Hall of Fame and much more. That publication they have, Coffin Corner, as he said, comes out 6 times a year. Well worth it. Thanks again to John Turney for joining us. The website, profootballresearchers.com. And thanks to John for joining us on the Subway Fresh Take Hotline. Subway, eat fresh. We'll be back to wrap things up. Look back at the show when we return. The John Murphy Show presented by NOCO. Live tonight from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
This is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Thanks again to John Turney for joining us from the Pro Football Researchers Association. I always learn a lot from those guys when they're on the air. I really do. Which gets us to our final segment tonight and every night. What have we learned from tonight's show? Well, I've learned that I've got to follow through this time, Jay, and join the Pro Football Researchers Association. I think there's a lot of dedicated guys there, including John and Ken Crippen, who's been on the show before, who come up with interesting things that people want to hear about. And, you know, let's face it, we probably skew to an older demographic here, old guys like me who remember the 70s and 60s and, in the 80s, although I don't remember that particular game in 1985.
I was just going to bring that up. I'm like, but you don't
I can't remember that.
Game.
I don't remember that. I wish I did. Look, I looked it up, mid-November game in Cleveland Stadium. Back-to-back sacks for Bruce. I don't know. Wouldn't surprise me if Bruce went in and lobbied to have the stat sheet changed to give him somebody else's sack. That would not surprise me at all.
Well, he has to back him.
Yeah, who's going to argue with him, right? Not Don Smith, who got it originally. So what else have we learned? We learned that the Pro Football Researchers Association has this Hall of Very Good, which seems to me loaded with American Football League players, including some Bills, Tom Sestak, Lou Saban, several others, Daryl LaMonica, and several others. And Fred Smith, Fred Smirlis got a big shout-out from John on that. What else did we learn? Well, we learned about the Bills' rookie annual tour all over Western New York, Niagara Falls, New Era Cap Company, Women and Children's Hospital. We talked with six-round draft pick Tony Stewart, who said after a week or more in Buffalo just going to work, it was good to get out and see a little bit of Buffalo and Western New York.
I've been here, and really all I've seen was the apartment that we've been staying in, and right down the road was the stadium and the facility. So I hadn't seen much, but being able to tour around the day, I mean, you really get a feel for what this place is all about. And, you know, it's a very community-based place. It's there's plenty to do. We got to go visit Niagara Falls. That was such an awesome thing to do. It was a lot of fun. And just being able to kind of drive around the town and everything,
yeah.
It's beautiful. It's a different place.
Tony Stewart, six-round draft pick. So that's what we've learned. What else have we learned? Well, from our 8 o'clock, 8:10 guest, Casey Joyner, ESPN Insider, we learned a lot about his thoughts on the Bills' 2015 season and about Sammy Watkins. He happens to think that that trade a year ago in the draft when the Bills gave up this year's first-rounder to move up to get Sammy Watkins, Casey Joyner, analytics expert, thinks that trade may eventually pay off.
Will not surprise me, and it's going to take good quarterback play for it to happen, but it would not surprise me that if we're talking a couple, 3 years down the road, if you're not saying that Sammy Watkins is as good, if not better, than Odell Beckham Jr. I just think he's got that kind of talent. He's got to be healthy, and he's got to get good quarterback play, but the things he's capable of doing on short passes, long passes, and every route you can think of on the tree, the things he's capable of doing put him in that category. And I think the Bills are down the road going to be able to say, well, maybe it wasn't worth it after year one, but years two, three, four, five, and six, this guy, we're just going to show you he was worth trading at pick for.
Casey Joyner from ESPN, ESPN Insider. So that's what we've learned in tonight's show. We thank you for tuning in tonight. Have a great weekend, and we're going to be back on the air Monday night at 7 o'clock, 7 to 9 p.m. Want to thank our presenting sponsor, NOCO, family-owned and locally operated since 1933. Like NOCO on Facebook.com/NOCO for great deals, specials, and more. TJ Luckman, our engineer tonight, our producer Jay Harris, and the Bills Director of Broadcasting, Jeff Matthews. We'll see you Monday at 7 with the John Murphy Show presented by NOCO from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.